Happy New Year, young fella.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Well, looks like it might be a Happy New Year after all.
It's a special edition of Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you moments from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and it's our New Year's of Yesteryear show with an hour of excerpts of classic radio programs to hear how characters celebrated another year gone by. Now, with any holiday, a lot of planning is always involved, and for comedian Fred Allen, who in 1947 hosted one of radio's most listened-to comedy programs, brought on former vaudeville star George Jessel as a guest to map out his New Year's Eve.
Well, Georgie, I just happen to think my club is giving a party New Year's Eve.
Well, Fred, give your party at the carnival. A great show, you'll have the time of your life and only $2 a plate.
$2 a plate?
Well, if you want food on the plate, it's a little more, you know.
Well...
Take my advice, though, Fred. You have the $20 avocado dinner. With that comes the best of everything. Gold finger bowls and mahogany toothpicks. It's delicious, really.
Well, what do I get for $20?
Well, now, first before dinner, you get your own personal horn to blow at midnight. I have a sample horn here to show you.
Oh, that's a beauty, isn't it?
I should say it is. The mouthpiece is genuine plastic, you know.
Uh-huh.
It comes only with the $20 dinner. Now, get the tone on this horn.
Well, it does. It does have a certain gusto, Georgie. But for $20,
look,
if
Fred,
I'm blowing
please,
20...
please, unless you're insured, don't take the $2 dinner at the carnival.
You mean there's no horn?
Nah, for $2 you get this.
No, Georgie, that sounds like an unborn opinion.
And we should know. Well, anyway, look, with the $20 dinner, you should see the paper hat that you get. It's
yeah.
A red cellophane Hamburg with a lining and the initials F.A. in it, your initials.
Well, with the $2 dinner, what sort of a paper hat do you get?
An old copy of the Hobo News, nothing at all. Fold it up, it looks like a wet beret. You wouldn't want it.
Well, look, Georgie.
Fred, the confetti that you get with the $20 dinner...
What kind of confetti?
Chopped up $5 bills.
With the $2 dinner, you get confetti?
What confetti? The waiter comes, pulls the paper napkin from under your chin, tears it up, throws it right in your face.
Well, Georgie, $20 after all for a dinner.
Ah, but listen to the food that you get. Avocado and aspic, anchovies and aspic, guinea hen and aspic, aspic and aspic. And for dessert, ladyfingers.
But, Georgie, who could eat that mess? I'll get indigestion.
Not at the carnival, Fred.
Well, why not?
Those ladyfingers that you get for dessert...
Yes?
They are holding an Alka-Seltzer.
But I'm a light eater, Georgie. What now? What is the $2 dinner?
To a $2 dinner, you get a sprig of parsley on a plain glass plate.
A glass plate?
Yeah, you're not only starved, but the waiter looks through the glass plate, sees you leaving a nickel tip, gets mad, takes away the knife and fork, hits you on the head. It's nothing.
What about the drinks?
Oh, the drinks. Ho-ho! With the $20 dinner, you get the finest French champagne. It has the Hildegard seal of approval.
And on the $2 dinner?
The waiter takes off your shoes, puts grapes under your feet, you step on the grapes. It tastes like an oleum. You wouldn't like it at all.
Well, Georgie, in self-defense, I think I'll take the $20 dinner.
Fred, you are doing the right thing, believe me.
I'm all set for New Year's Eve.
Fred, this will be a night that you will long remember.
Fred Allen and George Jessel from December 14th, 1947. Allen's program was broadcast from New York City, and at that time, workers were preparing for what would be the 41st Times Square ball drop event to ring in the new year. While many radio shows had their characters planning parties, the writers of comedian Milton Berle's program had a different idea on the night of December 30th, 1947.
You know, when I was young, I had a beautiful voice, too. I used to sing in the sheet music department at Macy's until they caught me singing in the wrong register. In the wrong register. Happy New Year. I'm kidding. Gosh, Mr. Gallup, you know, I can't wait until tomorrow night. I'm really going to hit the high spots.
Well, Burl, an intelligent man stays home New Year's Eve.
I know. I stayed home last year and never again. Did I ever tell you what happened to me last New Year's Eve?
No.
Would you like to hear about it?
No.
Gee, you're getting so nosy lately. Anyway, here's what happened. You want to know what happened?
I'd love to know what happened.
Well, you will do the straight lines on it. Well, here's what happened. I could say that for another hour, we'd have no program. My wife and I were invited to a New Year's party at our neighbors, the Harrisons. But I decided, Mr. Gallup, just for once, I was going to stay home and just spend a nice, quiet New Year's Eve. And my wife was all dressed up, and I'll never forget it.
Milton, it's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard, staying home New Year's Eve. You're getting as dead as those jokes you tell.
Now, darling, you just run along next door to the Harrisons and try to have a good time without me.
Try? You're kidding.
I'll call you at midnight and wish you a happy New Year. Good night, darling.
Good night, Speedy.
Ah, nice cozy evening in my easy chair at home. Now I can finally read that book Mr. Gallup gave me for Christmas. Oh, here it is. The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire. Nice of him to remember I like baseball. It's a pretty big book. I bet before I even get to the middle of it, I guess who did it. Let's see. Here's the first page. Preface. Gallup said it was a hard book to read. Oh, no. No, that knock. That's Sam Harrison and his wife, Martha. Come in.
Happy New Year, everybody! And that goes for Martha, too, doesn't it, Martha?
Yes.
Hello, Sam. Hello, Martha. Oh, you brought the little daughter of yours over, Susie.
Yes, your wife suggested since you're staying home, we bring her over here.
Sam, please, I'm tired.
Well, to your New Year's Eve party is no place for a little 5-year-old girl. You know the kind of stories I tell once I get going. Hey, Martha.
Yes.
Okay, come in, Susie.
Now, be a good little girl, Susie, and don't bother your Uncle Milty. Good night, Milty.
Well, well, well. Here we are.
Little Susie.
Uncle Milty and little Susie are going to spend a nice, quiet New Year's Eve together, aren't we?
Yes.
Just as gabby as her old lady.
And in true Milton Berle style, that was just the warm-up of a night of craziness that ended up with him being arrested outside of his own house. Comedy programs capitalized on how out of control things could get on the big night, but a thought of a quiet and reflective evening at home was brought to life on several daytime shows, particularly soap operas. Here's a moment from Ma Perkins with her friend Shuffle on New Year's Eve 1950.
How could there be a better way of ending the old year than chomping on one of Ma Perkins' almond cookies with the powdered sugar all over the top? Say, nothing of what better way of starting off the new year. Better than the champagne-y wine they're having over at the Pendletons.
I believe they're having some sort of punch at the Pendletons. I believe that is told, see? You're sorry that you and me ain't young enough to get invited to the young folks' party at the Pendletons?
Oh, tarnation, Ma. As far back as I can remember, me and Ma Perkins always celebrated New Year's Eve right here in Ma's parlor. Drinking tea or maybe hot chocolate, nibbling on cookies or half of a homemade pie. I just feel sorry for all them young folks who ain't having as much fun as us tonight.
Oh, Shuffle.
Did you notice at Abby's party the other night how her and Willie was holding hands there at the end? Abby'd get up to do something, and Willie'd tell her to sit down. Abby, he'd do it. Well, coming from Willie, Ma, that was so... what's the word I want?
Oh, yes. Yes, Sheffield, yes, I know what you mean. So close to each other. Maybe this year bring the greatest gift of all to them, to Willie and Abby. Gift of learning that when all is said and done, it's each other which is most important. Each other and their home. Not getting rich or nothing like that.
Yes, Ma. And here we are again, Ma. You and me. Waiting for another new year.
Shuffle. Our time on earth can be so good. So full. If we just stay ourselves, taking things and folks as they come. Now, let's remember that this coming year, Shuffle.
And maybe before this coming year is out, maybe we'll have a wedding on our hands, Ma. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Spencer Grayson, our little Faye.
Not so much the wedding. Happiness. Yes, as we go into the new year, that's what I'm thinking about, too. Our Faye. Faye deserves so much. There's so much that we want for her. Yes, I pray the Lord that 1951 will bring Faye what she needs. The happiness that she deserves.
Yes, Ma. Huh? Why, Ma, we've talked the old year away. It's New Year, 12 o'clock.
So it is. Oh, what better way to end those than Ma and Sheffield talking?
Mm.
Happy New Year, Sheffield. Happy New Year, my dear old friend.
Happy New Year to you, Ma. And to every little speck of anybody or anything which you carry in your heart. To you and yours, Ma. A happy New Year.
Ma Perkins with friends Shuffle, wrapping up 1950 at home. During most of its time on the air, Ma Perkins was a very popular program, much like radio's best friends Amos and Andy, whose weekly shows used to stop bus lines and postpone movies. When they were on the air in the late 1920s, they had carried on their weekly radio show through the 1950s. At the time of this next New Year's themed excerpt in 1948, the show had over 20 million listeners a week.
Hello there, honey. Just playing little innocent cards, honey. What you putting on the light for now? What you mad about?
I've been waiting up for you for 5 hours.
Yeah, well, now, what you been waiting up for, honey?
Because this come in the mail today.
Oh, I didn't get a chance to see the afternoon mail.
This was addressed to you, and I opened it by mistake. It's a New Year's card for you, signed from one who loves you, your sweetheart.
Well, honey, somebody playing, you see,
Joyce Stevens, I ain't so sure. You've been out late 3-4 nights in the past 2 weeks. How do I know you've been playing cards?
Yeah, well, there was nothing else for me to do, honey. I mean, you has been out in the evenings working, on this welfare fund.
From one who loves you. Your sweetheart. This female meant this to be sincere.
Yeah, but darling, I know I wouldn't even look at another woman, though, honey.
Oh, no? What about that party we went to the other night when that young girl walked in that form-fitting hand-knitted dress she claimed she made herself? You didn't take your eyes off of her all evening.
Honey, believe me, I was just trying to see what stitch she used. That's all I wanted.
Now, listen, George, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I ain't gonna get excited about this. But if this card is from a girl, I'll break your neck.
Well, I guarantee, honey, I'll find out who sent me that New Year's card.
You better find out who it's from. Good night.
Sweetheart, till we meet tomorrow.
Come in, Andy.
Yeah, hi, Kingfish. Hi.
Say, Andy, did you or anybody you know send me a New Year's card?
I know, Kingfish. What's the matter?
Oh, somebody played a dirty trick on me. I got a New Year's card in the mail, and it looked like the thing is from some gal. Oh, my wife, Sapphire, sees the thing and she raving mad.
Well, who signed it?
No signature. It was anonymous.
Oh.
say on the bottom, from one who loves you, your sweetheart.
Yeah, well, a thing like that can cause serious reconcuxes at home, all right.
An excerpt of the Amos and Andy Show from December 26th, 1948. Incidentally, the episode ended like this.
Look at that, fellas. There's my little daughter, Albadella, in there saying a prayer. I closed the door so she won't hear it.
And now, dear Lord, please bless Mama and Daddy, our family, and all their friends. And I hope Uncle Kingfish enjoyed the New Year's card I sent him. Amen.
Many listeners during the golden age of radio would tune into programs like that and other well-known standbys during the holidays to hear their favorite characters take on the season, but they weren't all comedies. Crime shows of the period would use the new year as a backdrop to their mysteries, like this broadcast of Sherlock Holmes from December 28, 1947.
Now let's rejoin Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, locked in the smoke-filled bullion room of the Gigantic.
Good Lord. How long did it take for them to get us out of here? That smoke's suffocating.
Calm yourself, Watson. It can't be more than 3 minutes since we lit this smudge. Yes, I can hear someone running down the iron staircase.
I can't hear a blasted thing. How do you...
Hello! Hello in there!
Get us out!
We're in here!
Open the door! What a relief.
How in thunder did you two get locked in here?
What's all the smoke?
No time for explanations, Captain. Stop them stoking the furnaces. Flood the coal piles with water. They've been soaked with sulfuric acid.
Good Lord! Ledyard! Gates! Stop the firing! Stop the pumps in the engine room!
Well, that's that, Holmes. What do you suppose has become of that dastardly purser?
We'll let Captain Brooks take care of him, Watson. Unless I'm very much mistaken, Mr. Brown is going to wish he'd never gone to sea. Well, come along. Let's go upstairs and join the festivities. I think we rate a bottle of champagne.
Well, to blazes with the champagne, I need a double brandy. Eight bells. Let's see, that'd be...
Midnight, Watson. Happy New Year, old fellow.
Happy New Year, Holmes, and many of them. But, don't you think you could manage to have them not quite so hair-raising?
And have you getting fat and lethargic? You know, that would be unhealthy. Not to say boring.
Oh, so now it's for my sake we indulge in all these horrendous escapades, eh? Fine bit of logic, that is.
Elementary, my dear Watson. Elementary. But here's the ballroom. Suppose we join the party.
Fine, my dear.
In other crime show broadcasts, the New Year's holiday was woven directly into the plot, such as radio's Big Town and the December 28, 1948 episode called
Dangerous Resolution. When a man plans a New Year's resolution to quit the rackets, deadly complications can develop. And such is the background of this fast-moving story of hijackers that began in a diner in the warehouse district of Big Town as a young truck driver sat talking to Vicki Mason, a waitress in the place.
How about another cup of coffee, Van?
No, thanks, Vicki. Look, you ain't busy now. Listen a minute, honey.
I'm tired of listening to your promises, Van.
You still sore about seeing me with that Bubbles dame the other night?
No, I'm not jealous of that hen-headed burlesque stripper. I know she's Silky Martin's girl. And I know why you were out with her.
All right, why?
Because Silky is using her to soft soap you into hustling trucks for him.
Why shouldn't I drive a truck for Silky once in a while? He pays big dough. More for one night's work than I could get in a week pushing a 10-tonner for a company outfit.
Because there's something crooked about it, or Silky wouldn't pay you that kind of money.
Maybe so, but what's it matter as long as I don't do anything but drive the trucks?
Because one of these nights, Silky Martin's going to pull a fast one, and you're going to be in the middle of a mess.
Oh, now, Vicky.
Please, Van, you're one of the best drivers in Big Town. You could get a job any place. Good steady money every week and not get into trouble.
Sure, I know,
please,
but you don't...
Please, Van, for your mother's sake and mine. She's worried, frightened.
Now listen, Vicki, I'm doing this for Ma's sake, so she won't have to scrub floors and office buildings for the rest of her life.
Oh, she doesn't want that kind of money, Van.
What about you? We can get married quicker.
Please, Van, I don't want that kind of money or that kind of a marriage. Please.
Okay, honey. That settles it. I'm doing a job for Silky tonight, but this will be the last.
Oh, no, Van, no. Quit now.
Oh, I can't, Vicki. I promise, Silky, but I'll make you a promise, too. I'll make a New Year's resolution to quit hustling trucks for Silky and then get a regular job.
No, Van, please. I have a scared feeling something's going to happen. Quit now, tonight.
I can't. Oh, here's Silky. Now, don't say anything. And I promise this is my last haul. My New Year's resolution, honey.
Hi, Van.
Hello, Silky.
Hi, beautiful.
Hello.
What kind of New Year's resolutions are you lovebirds making, huh?
We were just talking about...
Get married right after the New Year, Silky.
Oh, fine. Congrats.
Thanks.
Draw me a cup of Java. Bridie.
Cream and sugar?
With everything, beautiful. I always take everything.
Yes, I know. Everything you can lay your hands on for nothing.
An excerpt from Radio's Big Town and the play Dangerous Resolution. On the Mutual Broadcasting System on New Year's Eve 1950, radio's Mysterious Traveler took the New Year holiday and twisted it into one of the more intriguing episodes of the series that brought a disorienting story to listeners before they rang in 1951.
What am I doing here? What's your game?
Charles, can't you remember anything about us?
What are you talking about? I never saw you before. And why do you keep calling me Charles? My name is Chris. Chris Andrews.
Chris Andrews. So that's what the initial CA stood for.
Oh, that noise out there. What are they making such a racket for?
Because it's midnight, New Year's Eve.
Midnight? New Year's Eve? But it was midnight hours ago when I left the Club Tropicana. What are you talking about?
Oh, that must be Dr. Smith. I'll answer it.
Dr. Smith? I don't know any Dr. Smith.
Oh, come in, Doctor. I'm so glad you're here. I think it's the amnesia. It seems to have left him all of a sudden. Charles? It's Dr. Smith.
I don't know him, and I don't know you. And please stop calling me Charles. I told you my name is Chris Andrews.
Mm-hmm. Won't you sit down, Mr. Andrews? I'd like to talk with you for a few minutes.
What about?
Tell me, Mr. Andrews, what's the last thing you remember before finding yourself in this apartment?
Why, Judy. She and I were at the Club Tropicana, celebrating New Year's Eve.
I see.
I remember we quarreled about my drinking. I walked out on her and had a few drinks someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I can recall. Oh, my head. I've had hangovers, but I've never felt like this before. What time is it?
It's just 4 minutes after 12.
But it can't be 4 minutes after 12 New Year's Eve. That was hours ago when I left the Tropicana.
Mr. Andrews, that was New Year's Eve, 1947.
What do you mean, that was New Year's Eve, 1947?
This is New Year's Eve, 1948.
What are you talking about? It's 1947.
Well, here's the morning paper. You can see the date for yourself.
Thursday, January 1st, 1948. No, it can't be. It can't be. A year gone? Just like that? Well, where did it go?
That seems to be the question as every year closes, but it's this time of year that it's fun to take a look back, and in this hour, it's pretty far back to radio's yesteryear during this New Year's special on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. We're listening back to how several popular programs during radio's golden age wove the New Year holiday into their shows and stories. Even programs that took audiences back farther to simpler times like the Old West, as the Wild Bill Hickok program did on New Year's Eve, 1954.
Well, Jingles, if we can find that stolen money, we can sure help a lot of people out.
That's right, Bill. You know, I grumble an awful lot. But I don't think I'd want a job where I couldn't do some good for somebody else.
We've got to move fast if we're going to make it this time. In a few hours, it's going to be New Year's Day. Get along there, Buckshot.
Move on out, Joker. This is a heck of a way to celebrate Happy New Year. Bill is darker than a yard down a prairie dog hole.
The moon will come out pretty soon, Jingle.
Well, that'll help some. Won't make it any warmer.
It usually is cold on the last day of the year. Pull up, Jingle. Hoo, Buckshot.
Hoo, Joker, hoo. Well, now what do we do?
Strike a match. Going to look for some signs.
I might just as well have stayed home. I never see anything. You find a black horse hair on a bush and a couple of hoof prints. What's that?
It's a bandana handkerchief, Jingles. Probably the one the robber wore for a mask.
Bill, you're either the luckiest man in the world or the greatest tracker. Now, how'd you know enough to stop right here in the dark?
That's easy, Jingles. Strike another match, will you?
Yeah.
You see, Buckshot tried to turn off the trail here. He knew another horse had left the trail not too long ago.
How'd you know that?
Well, there's a couple of hoof prints leading down to the valley. Grass is still springing up straight. You know, that horseman isn't too far ahead of us.
Well, if it's our man, he must have stopped along the way. He had a long head start on us.
Yeah, he probably stopped for the night and just moved on when he heard us coming up behind him. Looks like we're on the right trail. Put out that match, Jingles.
Looks like we're on the right trail, Bill, but are you sure we want to be?
The Wild Bill Hickok program had a vast audience during its time on the air, thanks in part to the television series being broadcast at the same time. Much was the case for the well-remembered family-centered sitcom on both TV and radio, The Life of Riley. Now, I think it's fair to say that if you're painting the town red on New Year's Eve, you'll run into a show-off or two, But with Chester A. Riley, this often got in the way of his family's happiness, even on New Year's.
That reminds me, Ted. Your new formal gown for New Year's Eve just came from Saks 10th Avenue.
My gown? But, Daddy,
always wears a formal gown New Year's Eve. Wouldn't dream of going out without a nightgown.
Daddy, I'm positive Mother's calling you from the yard.
Impossible. She's got a mouth full of clothespins. Yes, sir, Ted, you should see Babs on New Year's Eve. Looks like $1 million. And she don't go out with just anybody.
Well,
Oh, Daddy, don't exaggerate.
Isn't she the modest one? Ted, you should have seen the boy who called for her last New Year's. One of them high society boys. You know, a Pasadena socialist. Boy, was that a nifty Cadillac he drove up in.
A Cadillac?
Yeah, the convertible kind. During the day, it's a Cadillac, and at night, it's a Lincoln. And you should have seen the orchids he brought her.
Oh, Babs likes orchids?
Can't live without them. What a load this boy brought. He must have poured out a push cart.
Daddy, I'm sure Mother wants you.
Oh, well, okay. Well, I better be going.
I guess I better be going, too. Good night, Babs.
Oh, but Ted, you started to say something before. I mean...
Oh, it wasn't important. Well, so long, Babs. See you around after New Year's.
Wait, Ted. Why don't you stay for supper?
No, thanks. I really got to be going. Good night.
All right.
What's the matter? Riley, what happened?
The nerve of that Ted making our little Babs cry. There, Babs, he's not worth it.
Oh, you spoiled everything.
Me? What did I do?
Now, Babsy, darling. Ted was just going to ask me for a date when Daddy started making up stories and scared him off.
But, Babsy, I didn't know. I thought...
Please,
that...
don't speak to me. You've ruined my whole life.
But...
Chester Riley, how could you be so...
But, gee, I was only trying to...
Do you realize what you've done? That poor child will have to stay home on New Year's Eve.
I'll make it up to her. I'll stay home with her.
It's too late for her to get another date. She's turned down every boy that's asked her.
I'll get her a date. You'll see. I'll fix it.
Oh, where are you going to get her a date?
Well, I don't know, but don't worry. I'll get her a date for New Year's Eve if it takes me 6 months to do it.
The Life of Riley, from December 28, 1946. I'm sure many listeners at that time, and even now, were able to relate to either daughter Babs or father Riley, though hopefully not too much in Riley's case. But being close with family and friends for the new year is in part what makes it great. And Radio's Life with Luigi set up their sitcom on December 27, 1949, with the premise of Luigi Basco writing a letter to his mother back home in Italy, which he read aloud at the top of every program.
Someday, Mamma Mia, maybe you come to America, and you're going to see how the people here, they celebrated the New Year's. Dancing and a-singing and a-hollering and a-whistling. Then at 12 o'clock at midnight, the lights go out, the fellas is a-kissing the girls is a-kissing the fellas. Everybody is a-kissing. This is a democracy. Last New Year's Eve, when the lights was a go out, I was standing next to Pasquale's fat Dora Rosa. Mamma mia, I'm a thought that the whole of democracy was a fall on me. But I'm sure I'm going to have a good time with this New Year's. But one thing would make it perfect. In America, is the custom on a New Year's Eve, everybody is a call up his mama and a wish you a happy New Year. Oh, I wish I had enough money to call you up and hear your voice again. Well, it's no use to dream, besides it's the time I should go to my night school class, so I'm going to finish this letter later.
With the new year upon us, reflection is part and parcel with the holiday. And for a period of about 4 years during radio's golden era, this looking back and ahead seemed even more important, as in this country, the Second World War affected the lives of nearly every citizen in some way. Many used radio at that time for news of the war, as well as an escape from the reality of war with comedies and mysteries, and variety shows like the Radio Hall of Fame, a program which, a few days before the new year of 1944, brought both the war and the New Year's sentiment together with a piece from one of the country's most beloved authors.
As the year draws toward its close, in the sound and fury of global war, it is natural that our thoughts should turn toward the future. And if our thoughts on this last Sunday of the old year could be uttered in one huge national voice, it's certain, I think, that they would find expression in a prayer for victory and peace. To give words today to the unspoken New Year meditations of millions and millions of Americans, we had selected a distinguished actor and a great poet. The poet, Stephen Vincent Benet, whose death in 1943 deprived the free world of one of its most eloquent pleaders for human rights. The actor was to have been Orson Welles. When we learned that illness would prevent Mr. Welles from appearing, we were fortunate enough to be able to engage in his place a brilliant young actor, Raymond Edward Johnson, recently starred on Broadway in Sidney Kingsley's prize-winning play, The Patriots. In The Patriots, Mr. Johnson played the role of Thomas Jefferson. Tonight, he speaks as Jefferson might speak to Americans about to enter a third year of war. Raymond Edward Johnson, then, in Toward the Future, a combination of two celebrated radio works by Stephen Vincent Benet.
Pledge our hearts and lives today to the cause of all free mankind. Grant us victory over the tyrants who would enslave all free men and nations. Grant us faith and understanding to cherish all those who fight for freedom as if they were our brothers. Grant us brotherhood and hope and union, not only for the space of this bitter war, but for the days to come, which shall and must unite all the children of earth. Our earth is but a small star in the great universe. Yet of it we can make, if we choose, a planet unvexed by war, untroubled by hunger or fear, undivided by senseless distinctions of race, color, or theory. Grant us that courage and foreseeing to begin this task today, that our children and our children's children may be proud of the name of a man.
Part of a wartime New Year's message on the Radio Hall of Fame from December 26, 1943. There were many programs that took on the topic of World War II in their weekly broadcasts, like the West Coast program Eyes Aloft, dedicated to the thousands of volunteers of the Aircraft Warning Service who watched the skies for enemy planes. They offered a New Year's message when the war for America was just better than a year old.
This is Ken Carpenter speaking and wishing that in these closing days of 1942, we could say a Happy New Year to you as blithely as we have in years past. But we of the Eyes Aloft radio program, the cast, the actors, the members of the orchestra and its leader, Gordon Jenkins, the four boys of the Sportsman Quartet, our writer, all of us, in working so closely with the Aircraft Warning Service, have seen so much of unselfish devotion to home and country that we're very humble in offering our New Year's greeting for 1943. The past months have been momentous ones. The future lies before us full of great opportunity. There'll be dark days, yet so long as there are civilian volunteers like those in the Aircraft Warning Service backing up our men in the armed forces, the years ahead will and must be better ones, not only 1943, but 44, 45, 46, and so on. Now, as we go on the air with our final program of 1942, your guide, as usual, will be Gayne Whitman.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I will wish you a happy new year, because I think it will be a milestone in the lives of all of us. We are learning what sacrifice really means, what joy the true spirit of unselfishness brings us. Now, even more than ever before, Americans are proving themselves worthy of their heritage. Sacrifice and courage are the rule rather than the exception. Projects such as the Pioneer Aircraft Warning Service, which a year ago seemed so difficult, have been carried through effectively. Many thought that the idea of volunteers operating a system so essential to the defense of our country, so much a part of the armed forces, would prove impracticable. Working around the clock, each observer, plotter, filterer, teller, must be constantly on the alert. Seconds count as they never did before. But loyalty and an eagerness to be a part of it all overcame the seemingly great difficulties. The Volunteer Aircraft Warning Service is an outstanding success. The Army and the other volunteer workers in civilian defense have come to rely on it without question.
An excerpt of Isa Locke from December 28, 1942. This is a special edition of Tuned to Yesterday, celebrating the New Year's holiday of radio's past. I'm Mark Livonier. Now, following the Second World War, many of the celebrities that helped entertain the fighting men and women overseas were still heard on radio and used the new year to liven up their already popular shows, like the cast of the Jack Benny program, who in 1950 included the singing talent of the Sportsman Quartet, who would integrate the show's sponsor into a song, along with the portly announcer Don Wilson.
One more year has come and gone, and Benny's feeling fine. When his toupee is old and gray, he'll still be 39. Here's a resolution every one of you can make. Be full of cheer throughout the year, and then, for goodness sake, be happy, go lucky, be happy, go lucky, strike. Be happy, go lucky, strike today.
Very good, Don. Wonderful. And sportsmen, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Don, they talk. This is wonderful. Hey, come over here, fellas. Mary, say Happy New Year to them.
Happy New Year, boys.
Happy Year New.
Oh, darn it, the tenor got in the wrong place. Maybe we'll get it right next year. And now, ladies and gentlemen, as I started to say, since this is New Year's Eve, we are going to revive an old custom and present our New Year's fantasy entitled The New Tenant, or Goodbye 50, Hello 51. Now, I will play the part of the old year, 1950. And Don, you will be the world.
Oh, Jack, every time you do one of these fantasies, you make me play the world. Just once, I'd like to be the little New Year.
You play the part of the little New Year? Don, that's ridiculous.
Ridiculous? Why? I could wear a diaper, couldn't I?
Don, you not only can't wear a diaper now, but there's a great element of doubt in my mind that you ever could. So you'll play the part of the world. Just come dressed in your latitudes. Or if it's cold, wear your longitudes. Now, let's see.
Jack.
What?
How come you're getting most of the jokes in the program today?
My writer did that instead of buying me a Christmas present. Cheap guys. Now, Phil, you will play the part of Uncle Sam, and Mary, you'll be Uncle Sam's wife, Columbia. Now, you and Uncle Sam have 48 children.
48 children?
Wait till Alice hears about this.
It's only a play.
Although Jack Benny's show carried many traditions, like the New Year's fantasy, not to mention his annual Christmas shopping trip on the air, for lots of us, a New Year's Day tradition is to make the rounds to friends and family. And things were no different on radio's Fibber McGee and Molly. This from January 1st, 1952.
Honestly, McGee, I was ashamed of you. Did you have to make such a pig of yourself?
Where do you get that pig stuff? Did you ever see a pig eat potato salad and fruitcake?
Well, you know what I mean. What about the ripe olives and the smoked oysters?
They weren't as good as that turkey sandwich, boy.
Oh, dear.
Hey, I hope Latrivious won't come to count. Here's his house.
Happy New Year, Mr. Mayor.
Hi. Well, it's the McGees. Come in.
New Year's calling, Latriv. We're out seeing our friends, so we thought we might as well see you, too.
Well, this is a pleasant surprise. Another friend of yours is here, too.
Hello, Molly. Hi, pal. Happy New Year.
Well, Mr. Wilcox, the same to you.
Greetings, Junior.
Well, sit down, both of you.
Thanks.
Ah, it's great to relax with my friends a little. Spent most of the morning at the city council meeting where I delivered my annual New Year's address. I said, and I quote, "Members of our city council, as mayor of Wistful Vista, I feel that our fair city will make great strides during this year of 1949. In my opinion..."
Mr. Mayor, this is 1952.
Good heavens. I've delivered that same speech for 4 years and forgotten to change the day.
you should make a New Year's resolution to write a new one for next year, Mr. Mayor.
Don't you start with resolutions, Junior. None of that stuff for me. I say it's a lot of poppycock, and I'm one poppy that ain't going to go off half-cocked. That's silly stuff.
Oh, now, wait a minute. There's nothing silly about it, pal. Everybody makes New Year's resolutions.
Why, certainly. I've resolved to give up cigars.
I've made a resolution myself.
As Julius Caesar said when the boys ganged up on him, et tu, Brutal? Which means the party's getting rough.
Well, what did you resolve to do, Mr. Wilcox?
To take more walks and get more fresh air.
That's a fine idea, Harlow.
Yes, instead of walking to the market just once a day to buy a dozen cans of pet evaporated milk, I'll walk there 12 times a day and buy one can at a time.
You buy 12 cans of pet milk every day?
Well, of course. Doesn't everyone?
This may curdle your whole outlook on life. No, they doesn't.
Mr. Wilcox, what do you do with all those cans?
Why, I carry them around with me, Molly. Huh? When I eat in a restaurant, for instance, I always leave the waiter a can of pet milk for a tip, instead of just money.
The next time you go back, they can't find a table for you.
No, on the contrary, pal, they're eager to serve me.
Is that so?
Yes, you see, waiters are experts on food, and they know that pet milk is the secret of so many rich, nourishing, delicious-tasting dishes.
Mm.
If I may interrupt this discussion a minute, pal. How about some refreshments, Molly? Some cake? Some ice cream?
No, thanks, Mr. Mayor. We've been eating all day. One of us has.
I'll have a little, Homer.
Well, hold the dish, McGee. There's plenty of ice cream. Just say when.
Okay, boy, dish it up.
All right.
The reason I get such a bang out of these resolutions you guys make, Latrivia, is on account of because I made a stack of them. Oh, I made them last year at 8 o'clock in the morning. And what time you think I busted them? 10. I didn't say when, I said 10.
On radio, Fibber was known for many things, but modesty was not one of them. Much like his fictional neighbor on the show, Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, who was such a popular character, became the focus of one of radio's first spin-off series called The Great Gildersleeve, a sitcom that always took advantage of the holiday season, including New Year's, like in this excerpt from December 31st, 1947.
But it's all over for this year. Now we can relax. What time is it?
Only 2 o'clock. Should I get my pad and pencil?
Bessie, it's December 31st. Doesn't that mean anything to you?
Oh, yes, sir.
What?
Gosh, I don't know. I guess you caught me in a fib, Mr. Gildersleeve.
It means it's the last day of the year, Bessie. Let's close up the office. Besides, I have some arrangements to make for New Year's Eve.
Oh, you mean all those parties, Mr. Gildersleeve? You certainly were invited to a lot of them.
Well, yes, I was.
New Year's parties are such fun. When it's 12 o'clock, you say, Happy New Year, and then kiss everybody.
Yes, you have the general idea, Bessie. Let's see, I'll stop in at Doris's at 9, Eve's at 9:30, pay a call on the Bagley sisters at 10, then be back at Doris's by 11. She invited me twice.
But you can't celebrate until midnight, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Well, they all have radios, Bessie. I'll find New Year's someplace. I bet you could turn on that portable there and find they're celebrating right now in Calcutta or someplace.
Oh, Mr. Gildersleeve, do you really think so?
I was only making a point, Bessie. The time changes around the world. Now run on home and have a happy New Year. The office is closed.
Thank you, sir. And Mr. Gildersleeve, you've been very nice to me this year.
Well, you've been a pretty good secretary.
I have, Mr. Gildersleeve. Oh, Mr. Gildersleeve.
No, Bessie.
Happy New Year.
Bessie.
Happy New Year.
Bessie, it's still early.
It's Happy New Year in Calcutta. You said so.
Yes.
Happy New Year.
Yeah. And the radio wasn't even on.
Radios indeed were on the world over, year after year on New Year's Eve, mostly for the music, though in this hour we focused on how comedies and dramatic shows honored or took advantage of the holiday. Many radio listeners in the 1930s through the 50s on the big night were treated to band remotes from across the country, where affiliate stations would have microphones and equipment set up at regional night spots to be broadcast nationwide, like this remote from the Hotel Syracuse from New Year's Eve 1958.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is CBS Radio's great annual New Year's Eve dancing party from Syracuse. The Hotel Syracuse, the beautiful Persian Terrace, the greatest ever this year with 16 famous bands all over the nation playing out the old year and ringing in the new. Before the night's over, and we go till 4 a.m., mind you, you'll be celebrating to the music of Count Basie, Guy Lombardo, Duke Ellington, Lawrence Welk, Turk Murphy, and plenty of others. Right now, it's the famed Glenn Miller Orchestra with Ray McKinley from Syracuse and String of Pearls.
During radio's golden age, and some even today, felt New Year's Eve wouldn't be complete without Guy Lombardo's orchestra, Bing Crosby, or Fred Waring and his Pennsylvanians. Waring being a major financier behind a device that would help out mixologists on New Year's Eve everywhere, the Waring Blender. Here's his interesting take on the song that seems to close out every year.
Hey, Bill, look up there in front of that record shop. That's something.
Hey, girls dancing. Man, are they having a time.
Hey, girls. Oh, girls.
Hi, Squares. What goes?
Well, we're Fred Waring.
Oh, I can't bear it.
The most old
cast is cast. Let these eggs poach. Take it from the top, mister.
Well, we want to know what you're celebrating.
Don't be an E-flat. New Year's, dope. 1947. What do you want, 1927?
Come to think of it, maybe you got something there.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot
and never brought to mind?
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind?
That's right. Probably the most famous dance spot in America.
Oh, my aching dogs. Listen, I couldn't drag one foot after.
Why, Willie! Willie Bibbins! Where did you come from?
A looky here now, doggone, if it ain't little Sally Watson from down home. Happy little old New Year, honey.
And me just pining for a dance in May.
Well, honey, that's what you pine no more.
Should old acquaintance be forgot?
Fred Waring and his Pennsylvanians from December 31st, 1946. And with that, the ball has dropped on our New Year's special on Tuned to Yesterday. I hope you've enjoyed listening back to how the Golden Age of Radio celebrated another year gone by. And I trust your celebration will be either just as fun or reflective as you ring in the new year. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Happy New Year.
You know, if we could transport the members of our cast directly to your homes today, in person, you'd have the makings of quite a remarkable pre-New Year's party.
So come to the party, everybody. It's a night of reservations and resolutions. Fun without reservations, and so far as resolutions are concerned, bring your own so you can break them early.
You made me a little sad.
Older?
Yes. You see, I gave a big New Year's Eve party, and there were lots of people there, and I hoped that you would be one of us.
I'd be one of you?
Yes.
Which one?
Well, so you see, at midnight, I was going to be Old Father Time and depict the passing of the old year.
Yeah.
And do you know what you were supposed to be?
I was supposed to be one of those kids?
Yeah.
little wristwatch.
Yeah.
Mary, get to the last verse, will you?
It's coming up now.
That's good.
Oh, Happy New Year, Happy New Year. Please don't be a sad and blue year. We will give you one more chance. So goodbye, Broadway. Hello, France.
Well...